From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. Maine Senator Susan Collins pressed Trump administration officials Wednesday on proposals to cut more than $9 billion from international aid and public broadcasting programs that had already been approved by Congress. Collins, who chairs the powerful Senate Appropriations Committee, raised particular concerns about a proposal to claw back $400 million from a program to treat and prevent HIV and AIDS around the world. Collins says the program started by President George W. Bush has been credited with saving more than 26 million lives around the world.
Cutting funding now, funding that is aimed at preventing disease transmission, would be extraordinarily ill-advised and short-sighted.
Collins also expressed concerns about a proposal to cut more than $1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which helps fund PBS and NPR stations, including Maine Public. Wednesday's hearing was the first chance for committee members to question Russell Vogt, the director of the Office of Management and Budget, about the administration's rescission plan. Maine Senator Angus King says he will vote against the budget reconciliation bill when it comes up soon for a vote. In an online session Wednesday with reporters, King was unsparing in his criticism of the measure.
I think this is the worst, most regressive, and most harmful piece of legislation I've ever seen.
King says the Medicaid cuts threaten to shift nearly $600 million of expense to Maine state government while forcing anywhere from 2 to 5 hospitals to close. He says the changes to the SNAP program could cost 32,000 Mainers to lose those benefits, and that the tax provisions are incredibly regressive. Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins has told the online news site Semaphore she wants, among other things, a $100 billion stabilization fund for hospitals and a return to a top income tax rate of 39.6%. She has yet to say how she might vote on the budget reconciliation bill. More than 64,000 Mainers have health insurance through the Affordable Care Act's online marketplace. But state officials and healthcare advocates say that many would lose coverage under proposed changes in the congressional budget bill. And some say that the changes, which could get a Senate vote by the end of the week, would threaten the very stability of Maine's overall healthcare system. Patty White has the final story in a 3-part series on how the bill could affect healthcare in Maine.
Like any good hairstylist, Stephanie Boardman Wallace isn't just skilled with cuts and color, she's great with people. Boardman Wallace is preparing to color this client's hair in a small salon she operates out of her home in Fairfield.
Yeah, I got gray.
You did, you're a month overdue.
Yes.
For years, Boardman Wallace had health insurance through her husband's work. When he became disabled a few years ago, they lost coverage, so she took an additional job that offered insurance. But she left a few months ago and returned to hairstyling to have more flexibility to care for her mother.
Of course, being self-employed, I don't have any benefits, so I looked to the Affordable Care Act.
And she says she was able to find a plan she could afford on her tight budget. It costs $160 a month.
It's been working great, and it's there if I need it, so it's comforting.
But Boardman Wallace is worried that her health insurance costs could soon go up. Enhanced premium tax credits that make her plan affordable are set to expire at the end of the year, and Congress hasn't included an extension in the budget bill. That could send marketplace premiums soaring an average of more than 75%, according to health policy nonprofit KFF. Combined with changes to the marketplace in the bill, roughly 20,000 people in Maine would lose coverage, says Hillary Schneider, the director of Maine's health insurance marketplace.
The worst case scenario is that the marketplace could come crumbling down.
Schneider says the proposals would make it difficult for people to sign up for insurance. It would eliminate auto renewals, increase paperwork requirements to verify income, and penalize some people with fluctuating incomes.
And so it will be time-consuming and arduous for our consumers, But we're also going to have to hire a whole bunch of people, either through a vendor or on our own staff, which is going to cost us millions of dollars.
Supporters of the bill say the changes are necessary to combat fraud. A recent report from the conservative think tank Paragon Health Institute estimates there are more than 6 million fraudulent enrollments in the marketplace. The report says the fraud is often facilitated by brokers and incentivized by enhanced subsidies and weak verification requirements. It also found that fraud is heavily concentrated in federal exchange states, especially those that have not expanded Medicaid. Maine operates a state-run exchange and has expanded Medicaid, and independent Senator Angus King cast doubt on the report's findings.
My experience is that fraud in these programs is vanishingly small. And my concern is that we make changes like this to get after one fraudster, and we end up knocking 50 honest, worthy recipients off the rolls.
Other proposals in the bill target certain patients and providers. Lawfully present immigrants, such as asylum seekers, would no longer be allowed to enroll in the marketplace. And plans that broadly cover abortion care would no longer be eligible for federal cost-sharing reductions. That would have significant consequences in Maine, where state law requires that marketplace plans cover abortions, says Nicole Clegg, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Northern New England.
This is all about targeting states where abortion is legal and making it impossible to access.
Kate Endy of Consumers for Affordable Healthcare says all of these changes to the marketplace would mostly serve to disenroll people from coverage. And she says while that may save the federal government money, those costs would merely be shifted to others, including hospital emergency rooms.
Providers are going to have higher rates of uncompensated care. So the effects on people's health, on our healthcare system at large, are going to be significant.
I see reports every month on how many people that we take care of that don't have health insurance.
Max Linz is a trustee at Holton Regional Hospital. He's also a broker and vice president at FA Peabody Insurance and says the ACA marketplace has helped boost coverage for people who can't access it through their jobs. In fact, he's helped many people enroll.
I've been doing it since the day it started. And it's helped a lot of people. It really has. And it's helped even more people today than when it first started, just because of the improvements.
Hillary Schneider says the Affordable Care Act's marketplace was built to bring stability to the healthcare system, to plug the holes not filled by Medicaid or private insurance. And the budget bill, she says, stands to undo all of that. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The Maine House of Representatives has failed to override Governor Janet Mills' veto of a bill that would bar the state from seizing tribal lands for public use. The measure would have added a new eminent domain restriction to the 1980 Maine Indian Claims Settlement Act, but Mills says it's unnecessary because the agreement already imposes limits on taking tribal land, and she argues that the bill could not be undone if ratified by the four recognized tribes in Maine. The bill, sponsored by Republican Minority Leader Representative Billy Bob Falkingham, was enacted 89-55 in the House, but it shed 12 votes during Wednesday's override vote to fall well short of the two-thirds needed to overcome the veto. Representative Adam Lee, a Democrat from Auburn, sharply criticized Mills' objections and those lawmakers who he says have failed to challenge her on tribal issues.
Because every time we pass something and she vetoes it, her veto has been upheld.
Lawmakers also upheld four other vetoes that the governor issued in the past week. A new study from the Maine Department of Labor finds that in recent years, average wages have increased the most for workers without college degrees. As Ari Snyder reports, it's one factor behind the state's recent economic growth.
Over the last 25 years, Maine's economic output has increased steadily, even as the number of jobs has remained relatively flat. The report's authors say that's due to strong demand for labor, higher-paying jobs making up a greater share of the state's economy, and greater use of technology. Over the last 5 years, the report says wages for workers without a high school diploma rose 15%. For those with a high school diploma but no college degree, wages rose 10%. Still, workers with bachelor's degrees continue to earn higher average wages, though the rate of wage growth has been slower. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Consumer demand for electricity peaked at more than 26,000 megawatts on Tuesday when temperatures touched triple digits. It was the highest demand in the region since 2013, according to grid operator ISO New England. ISO was required to issue an emergency request for 250 megawatts due to what it called a, quote, unexpected loss of generation. Spokesperson Randy Burlingame says there were no brownouts or blackouts as operators in the region adjusted their local operations to cover the additional power needed to maintain the grid.
The peak that we saw on Tuesday, just over 26,000 megawatts of demand, it's just a little bit over what we had forecasted for the year. So still pretty much in line with our forecast. So right now we're just going to continue to monitor things and make sure things stay reliable.
Burlingame says he cannot discuss where the loss of power generation occurred. He says increases in solar power and energy efficiency have helped to keep demand fairly level in New England. Central Maine healthcare patients say they're still having a hard time reaching their doctors, accessing medical records, getting prescriptions refilled, and scheduling appointments. That's as a computer and phone system outage at the healthcare system has stretched more than 3 weeks. The computers were still down at Central Maine Medical Center in Lewiston last Friday when Christine Doucette took her daughter to the emergency department.
She needs to do a follow-up, but they haven't called her. So I don't know even if her doctor knows what went down with her. I'm assuming not. I think she needs to be proactive, which kind of stinks, but.
On a temporary website, Central Maine Healthcare has posted that almost all phone lines have been restored and information technology teams are, quote, moving swiftly towards full restoration. CMH shut down all network servers and phone systems in response to unusual activity in their software, which was reported on June 1st. And that's today's news. For more stories, visit mainpublic.org and join Irwin Gratz starting at 5 a.m. for Morning Edition. I'm Carol Bousquet. Thanks for listening.